Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Today, we're going to the movies and focusing on a documentary that has opened in Indianapolis, Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent. The documentary, which is playing now at the landmark Keystone Arts Cinema, is about celebrity chef Jeremiah Tower, arguably the country's first celebrity chef. He famously put his mark on Chez Panisse in Berkeley and opened Stars in San Francisco in 1984. But he eventually dropped off the foodie radar, only to resurface years later to resurrect New York's Tavern on the Green. We'll talk with Indianapolis resident and former Stars server Jonathan Osher about what it was like to work with Jeremiah Tower at Stars. We'll hear a review of the film from local critic Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, and I'll talk with Indianapolis restaurateur Peter George about the film and some connections he sees to his own career. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We talk with a lot of chefs here on Eat Drink Indie Radio, and we've talked with a number of celebrity chefs as well. But today we're focusing on the man who was arguably the country's first celebrity chef, Jeremiah Tower, who opened the restaurant Stars in San Francisco in 1984. The new documentary, Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent, explores Tower's life before, during, and after he found himself in the spotlight. It has been, apparently, a very lonely life and a difficult one. But while Tower's restaurant Stars was operating in San Francisco in the 80s and 90s, it was also, it seems, quite magical. Indianapolis resident Jonathan Osher was a server at Stars in the 1990s in San Francisco and tells us what it was like to work with Jeremiah Tower.
It was a magical experience. I arrived in San Francisco in the early 90s with a letter of introduction from a colleague of Jeremiah's for whom I worked in Chicago. They were co-founders of the American Institute of Wine and Food with James Beard and Julia Child and Richard Olney and Dick Graff. I had dined at this restaurant as a visitor to San Francisco, and with Gordon Sinclair's letter, I presented myself for an interview, and within a few days, I was hired.
Now, when was that?
That was back in 1994.
What was it like at Stars in 1994?
It was a magical place. It was a party every night. We were in the center of everything. We were around the corner from City Hall. We were around the corner from the Opera House, from Symphony Hall, from the Herbst Theater. We were close to the Union Square area. It was a destination. It was a place to see and be seen. It was a place to socialize. It was a mecca for anyone who loved food.
So it must have been, that must have been an awesome experience.
Incredible. A new menu every single day. Jeremiah and the executive chef at the time, Mark Frantz, would organize a new menu every single day. One waiter would interview all 9 of the chefs cooking lunch. One waiter would interview all 13 chefs cooking dinner and present the information to the staff at a meeting. There were days when City Hall emptied into the restaurant for lunch. At the close of lunch, we shut down for a few hours and then reopened at 4 o'clock. And if there were curtains at the Opera House or the Symphony, we would have a crush of people starting to stroll in as early as 5 o'clock to make a 7 o'clock show. There were times when all 3 were running. We called it a triple curtain night. And you've got 16 waiters and 8 busboys and 5 bartenders and a sommelier and a commis and a crew of 15 in the kitchen, seamlessly turning out dinner to 300 people who all had a destination by 7:30. And these were the socialites. And these were visiting celebrities. And these were what we now call foodies, who were there because they knew it was going to be an incredible experience.
What was the food like? You know, at that time period, what were people coming for?
They were coming for what Jeremiah is credited with creating: California cuisine, classical French technique with locally sourced seasonal ingredients. What was the food like? It was a synthesis: Asian influences, Central American influences, classical French technique, experimental combinations, subtle layering, and explosive flavors. It was about the architecture of the food. Jeremiah was not trained as a chef. His bachelor's and MA were in architecture. He never intended to get into food. He had traveled the world as a child, dining on luxury liners and grand hotels. He learned to enjoy food, but he wasn't trained as a chef.
That's fascinating because, you know, he became, you know, one of the very first celebrity chefs.
He was, much like Julia Child. She found herself in Paris taking classes in cooking. Jeremiah found himself in Berkeley and learned how to cook at Chez Panisse. He answered an ad that Alice Waters had placed in a newspaper for a cook for Chez Panisse back in 1972.
Now, that whole Chez Panisse time period and the controversy surrounding, you know, his work and cookbooks with his menus and not getting credit for things like that, that created, you know, the situation that led him to leave and found stars, right?
Well, there were other properties between his departure from Chez Panisse and the evolution of stars. There was the Santa Fe Cafe. There was the Balboa. And it was originally the investors from Balboa who gave him the capital to create stars.
And it was such of its time period, you know, 80s, early 90s. You know, that was a significant period of time for the development of American cuisine.
It was. It was a Reagan economy. The money was flowing. There had been a lapse in creativity. There had been a lapse in interest in classical technique. The area was ready for something new. People learned about fine dining from Julia Child on The French Chef, but life became more casual in the 70s and in the 80s. It was time to return to that excitement, to that elegance, to that creativity. And Jeremiah was in the right place at the right time.
We've been talking with Indianapolis resident Jonathan Osher, who worked at Jeremiah Towers restaurant Stars in San Francisco. We'll be right back with more about what that was like here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Documentary Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent, is playing in Indianapolis, and the film chronicles Tower's life, his childhood, his rise in the restaurant world at Chez Panisse and Stars, his disappearance from the food scene, and his reappearance a few years ago at Tavern on the Green in New York City. One person who has been looking forward to seeing the documentary is Jonathan Osher, an Indianapolis resident who worked at Stars in the 1990s. I sat down with Jonathan this past week to talk about his thoughts on Jeremiah Tower, the new film, and his memories of working with him. Now, the documentary that's opening here in Indianapolis this weekend, you know, that it's going to explain, you know, his rise, but then also his disappearance and then his reappearance. Are you looking forward to the movie?
I first heard about this movie last year. I saw something on the internet that Anthony Bourdain was involved in a project, a documentary about who he thought to be one of the sadly most forgotten influential chefs this country has ever known.
Now, that did sort of happen, didn't it? That he sort of got lost in the pantheon of celebrity chef.
Well, with the rise of the concept of the celebrity chef, there were television shows. There were marketing promotions. There was branding. Chefs published multiple cookbooks. They endorsed lines of cookware. They aligned themselves with wineries. Jeremiah never did that. He was committed to stars and the expansion of the concept. And he opened a property in Oakville. He tried to recreate stars in Oakville. He wanted to recreate stars in Palo Alto, down on the peninsula. Investors from the Far East suggested he take the concept internationally. There was a project in Vancouver.
So he got overextended.
Overextended, yes. Vancouver, there was Star Singapore. The plan was to create a slightly less upscale version of Stars as Stars Cafe. We opened Stars Cafe in San Francisco. It was the launch of a concept. And for reasons completely unbeknownst to me, there were maybe contractual difficulties, misunderstandings between the investors and Jeremiah. And Jeremiah was used to creative control, and I think the investors considered him more of a consultant as opposed to the artist overseeing all of the concepts. And he was forced out.
So he lost control of the restaurant and the type of, and the whole scene he had created, and then he kind of disappeared for a while.
Well, if you can imagine losing creative control of your business, your empire, I think he decided to step away.
Absolutely, absolutely, completely step away.
Seclusion? I wouldn't say Garbo-like seclusion. He consulted. He was in Mexico. He lived in New Orleans for a while. Place in Mexico, time in New York, traveling the world, writing, studying. He had so many connections. He just kind of went underground.
And then reappeared at Tavern on the Green. How incredible was that?
Tavern on the Green has such a history. It was the kind of place that you went because you always went. It had been famous for years, more for the location and the fact that it was a destination. It wasn't about the food.
So, which isn't unusual right there, that's where he resurfaced.
Well, Tavern on the Green went through how many changes of hands? How many times was the property sold and shuttered and relaunched? And there was a massive overhaul. A chef was hired, and the reviews were, in a word, horrible. And I'm not sure of the details, but I think somebody involved in the revival of Tavern on the Green thought, we need to bring in a genius to fix us. Not a full-time position, not a not a commitment to a year, two, or three. We need somebody to come in and whip this place into shape as a chef consultant on a provisional basis to bring us up to that four-star level again. And somebody said, Jeremiah, he's created something from nothing, and he came in. It was a 3 or 4 month commitment, and he did it.
He worked his magic.
So you said he worked his magic. So that's, I think that's partly what we want to see in the documentary is that magic. You know, how he created it in the first place, and how he, you know, worked it again.
I mean, the man is a genius, entirely self-taught. He loves food. He loves wine. It's an art for him. He loves a party. Every night at Stars was a party.
I wonder what the documentary, if there'll be surprises. Do you expect to be surprised?
I hope against hope that somehow they've found footage from a videotape that was made back in the early 90s called A Day in the Life of Stars. JT made an hour-long show about a day at the restaurant.
Now, that's when you were there.
That's when I was there. I want to see photographs. The people I would see on a weekly basis. Michael Tilson Thomas, the conductor of the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra, Lotfi Mansouri, who was the director of the opera, the socialites who were Jeremiah's friends, not just his customers, Tom and Sally Jordan of Jordan Winery, Denise Minnelli Hale, who was the reigning queen of San Francisco society, the foodies, who were foodies before there were foodies. Mayor Willie Brown was a regular.
So these are all people that you saw at Stars on a regular basis that were all part of that Stars magic you were talking about.
Exactly. We had a piano player every night. Occasionally a singer would be dining and she would join the pianist at the bar. I'm still in touch with my coworkers through the magic of Facebook, and I see somebody commenting about something. A lot of these people are still in the industry, and we have this commonality. We were a part of that magical time.
So do you think there might be anything in the documentary that, you know, that it would make you disappointed?
The only thing that could possibly disappoint me about this documentary is that it won't be long enough.
We've been talking with Indianapolis resident Jonathan Osher, a former server at Jeremiah Tower's Stars Restaurant in San Francisco. The documentary about Tower, The Last Magnificent, is playing at the Landmark Keystone Arts Cinema in Indianapolis. We are focusing today here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on the new documentary, Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent. The movie about celebrity chef Jeremiah Tower is playing at the Landmark Keystone Arts Cinema in Indianapolis. The film covers Tower's lonely childhood, the development of his interest in food, how he found himself cooking at Alice Waters' restaurant Chez Panisse in Berkeley, and then at his own restaurant Stars in San Francisco. It also explores why he dropped out of the food scene and why he resurfaced years later. Indianapolis movie critic Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap offers his take on Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent.
It wasn't that long ago in the ongoing feast that is the American story when chefs were considered servants, not celebrities. Jeremiah Tower grew up in that old world of privileged dining where white glove underlings flitted to and fro, fetching exotic dishes that other nameless persons had meticulously prepared for well-heeled diners. Then Tower crossed over to the kitchen side, bringing scintillating new ideas about cooking that permeated our culture and, in the process, upended the classic dynamic between the feeder and the fed. Tower served as a bridge between two culinary traditions, a largely self-taught cook who ran huge restaurants and almost single-handedly created what came to be known as California cuisine, which blended classic French cooking with American tastes and a then-novel emphasis on local ingredients. He was this country's original celebrity chef, not counting Julia Childs, whose province was teaching housewives to cook with flair. And from the early 1970s to the early 2000s, countless rising young chefs looked to him for inspiration and emulation. And yet, Tower's name is not one that resonates today in the minds of most people, even devoted gastronomes, certainly not in the way of other chefs whose fame came after, such as Wolfgang Puck. The new documentary from director Lydia Tenaglia, Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent, explores not only the genius of Tower, but how and why it's been overlooked. It's a penetrating portrait of a man who loves to be around other people, a naturally charismatic figure toward whom others are pulled, yet one who can be off-putting, stubborn, and brittle. As depicted in the film, Tower is now wandering through his eighth decade of self-imposed loneliness, an obsessive artist whose first and best relationship has always been with the food rather than the people who ate it. Tenaglia's background is in food television, including a long collaboration with Anthony Bourdain of No Reservations. She interviews dozens of well-known culinary figures, including Bourdain himself, Martha Stewart, and former New York Times restaurant critic Ruth Reichel, along with a host of other chefs who apprenticed under Tower or admired him from afar. And there are talks with his few longtime friends, several of whom admit that despite adoring Tower for 40 or 50 years, they don't truly know him. As Bourdain eloquently puts it, Tower has a private room inside of himself that few, if any, have ever visited. Tenaglia's camera also follows Tower himself around his solitary contemporary perambulations, first living near the sea in Mexico, cooking exquisite dishes for 10, even though he's the only guest at the table. And later, we shadow him during his brief, ill-fated attempt to return to high-profile restaurateuring, taking over the mammoth kitchen operation of Tavern on the Green, a New York City landmark where many chefs have failed to match quality to the quantity served. The film's best sequences explore Tower's youth and unlikely rise as a chef. As a son to a distant, wealthy executive and a caring but alcoholic mother, Tower recounts long trips they took all over the globe, often for weeks or months at a time, during which he was left almost entirely to himself. He was waited on hand and foot by servants, trying out every kind of food he could, memorizing and collecting menus, and eventually being taken under the wing of the kitchen staff. "From early on, I really think food was my best pal, my companion," he says. He tells the tale of walking alone along the beach near the Great Barrier Reef at the age of 6, encountering an aborigine who shared a dinner with him consisting of the barracuda he had just caught. Tower vividly describes smelling the fish searing on a makeshift grill right there on the sand, rubbed with herbs the man had gathered from the jungle. It's a moment of crystallized memory and pure magic, but one with a conclusion of unexpected darkness. After misspent years in his teens and 20s, studying architecture at Harvard, exploring counterculture, and cooking fabulous meals for his friends, Tower found himself cut off from his rich boy's allowance and in need of a job. Based on the strength of a berry tart he tasted, and the recommendation of friends, he inquired after a job at Chez Panisse, the storied Bohemian Berkeley bistro founded and run by Alice Waters. Taking over as chef, Tower soon put the place on the national map, and he also joined the free-willing party of carefree souls ensconced in the kitchen, cooking, eating, drinking, laughing, carrying on affairs. This included Tower and Waters, despite Tower knowing from an early age that he was gay. Eventually, the personal and professional affiliation dissolved, ending in bitter accusations over credit for the cuisine. The movie occasionally wanders chronologically, especially in the second half, in a way that doesn't serve the storytelling process well. For instance, people who worked at Tower's signature restaurant, San Francisco's Stars, question why it closed up suddenly in 1999 after years of being one of the top-grossing restaurants in the country. Some even offer psychological divinations, insisting Tower became distracted with other ventures, or had simply grown tired of the gig. Then the documentary retreads the same ground near the end, offering another reason that is as mundane as it is likely accurate. As you might expect, Tenaglia and her cinematographer, Morgan Fallon, lovingly caress the food with their lens. kaleidoscopes of shapes, colors, and textures that leap off the screen, burrow themselves into your soul, and make you yearn to eat, no matter when your last meal was. The latter portion of the film's title, The Last Magnificent, comes from the nickname of Lucius Beebe, a 20th century journalist and top hat wearing man about town who is credited with creating Cafe Society. It's clearly a role Tower desired for himself, the center of attention in a never-ending swirl of people who love to gather together for conversation, camaraderie, and above all, great food. Yet his ability to push people away, even leave them furious, was as boundless as his skills at the stove. The cuisine endures, but the fame did not. Jeremiah Tower was a celebrity, and then he became almost invisible. But as this probing documentary shows, he was always in the midst of a disappearing act.
We've heard from movie critic Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, who appears regularly on Wish TV's Indie Style. You can find his reviews at thefilmyap.com and look for him on Facebook. To get another reaction to the new documentary, Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent, I sat down to watch the film with Indianapolis restaurateur Peter George. There seemed to be some parallels in their careers. Jeremiah Tower opened Stars in 1984. Peter George opened his restaurant, Peter's, here in Indianapolis in 1985. They both left the restaurant scene and then returned to it, though with completely different results. After watching the film, which struck me as very sad, we talked about Peter's reactions, his thoughts on the rise of the celebrity chef, and his own experiences in the notoriously difficult restaurant business. Your basic reaction to the film?
Really, I go back just to the very beginning where he was a six-year-old boy, and my gosh, that was just almost hard to believe that you would be that insignificant to your parents that they didn't even know you were gone. And you're in Mexico, and you're six, and you're on the beach, and it's light goes to dark, and just unusual.
I mean, what an odd childhood to have had.
I wouldn't want it.
And so you have to wonder, did that shape him, you know, the childhood growing up with, you know, parents who are emotionally absent, sometimes physically absent, and just, you know, in a rich first-class luxe society world, ocean liners, fancy restaurants, but being alone.
Well, it sure seems that it gave him a snake tongue, because he bit a lot of people, and a lot of people bit back at him. I mean, so he's a little bit snake-bitten, you know? But, I mean, let's face it, that whole situation with the Chez Panisse and what happened was pretty remarkable in the aftermath when the book was written. I mean, my God, to be just thought of as a footnote, you know, it's like, okay.
The chef that wrote the menus, cooked the food, and then didn't get the credit.
Yeah. That, I completely understand why he was pissed off. I mean, I do. That was just wrong.
What do you think about the whole Stars era, you know, of when he was, so he opened it in 1984 in San Francisco. You opened Peter's restaurant in Indianapolis in 1985. What do you think of, you know, what he was trying to do and the whole milieu of the time?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, there were a number of places in Chicago that I used to go to, and I saw, you know, the old, new. So there were a lot of French chefs in Chicago, and I saw what they were doing, and then had an opportunity to go to California and go to some restaurants and see some really interesting things. And I kind of just put it together, and, you know, Indianapolis became my landing spot. But I was certainly trying to change the world here anyway, my own little world. I was. I mean, I knew what was here, and I didn't really think we had it. I think Fletcher Boyd was trying to change the world, too, you know. I think the two of us kind of took it on single-handedly almost for a little while. And it was fun. I mean, it was a ball, you know.
So can you understand what he was trying to accomplish with Stars and what he was trying to do with sort of an American cuisine?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was always, somebody asked me just, you know, I mean, last week about farm to table. And so you've got kind of a farm to table restaurant. I said, I've been farm to table all my life in my restaurants, even though I'm not a chef. That's what I've professed. That's what I've done. I've always helped in that, you know, cultivation of food and so forth. So yeah, I get it. I mean, it's what it should be. I mean, you and I were just talking about it when you walked in the door. So, you know, strawberries are here. Let's use them, you know, or whatever it is. So it's a big, I think it's a huge deal. And we don't wear it on our sleeve right now at either one Tinker Street or Festiva. We don't wear it on our sleeve, but it's part of what we do and it's part of who we are. And you either know it or you don't.
Do you think that we'll see a chef like Jeremiah Tower again?
Well, according to, you know, the authorities on the subject, they're talking maybe not. You know, have we seen somebody since him? What about Charlie Trotter? Was he cut from very similar cloth? I'm guessing yes. So, and of course he's gone, but I'm thinking that we maybe already have seen some people like Jeremiah Tower, and I'm guessing we will. But they might not be as, I'm just going back to that scene. They might not be as snake bitten as he is or was.
Seemed very hurt. They made a point in the film of talking about how lonely he is. You know, and a lot of the disappointments that happened throughout his career. So it isn't particularly an uplifting film.
Oh, no. It is not uplifting at all. It's a little bit depressing if you're living in that world, our world, my world, because as they spoke about the guillotine, you know it's there. You know.
That's right. They talked about you know, looking toward the crown, but always knowing that the guillotine was there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know it is. And, you know, I've had the guillotine, you know, and so is my business partner. So we get it. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's what kind of gives you a hot feet. You know, you're trying to constantly stay ahead of it a little bit. You know, and people, well, you guys are too old. You can't possibly have that kind of passion. Well, I'm probably more passionate right now about it than I ever have been. For the mere fact is I don't want to fail. You know, I just don't want to ever have that happen again. So.
Can you relate to the situation Jeremiah Tower found himself in then?
Yes, the earthquake, no, but I can because of 9/11 and what a rough scene that caused on my own personal side of things. So, yeah, I get it. I mean, I didn't have it at my doorstep, but let's face it, it was a worldwide epidemic that took place, and it was right here in Indianapolis.
So those sorts of things happen, you know, in the lives of restaurateurs, chef owners, that sort of thing. And then how do you deal with it? Obviously, you know, he left the scene completely. Is that how you deal with it?
I did it for 13 years. I exited out. So I guess yes, to a degree. I didn't really want any part of it. And, you know, I was kind of holed up out in that Geist area. And then just found, I mean, maybe sort of like when he went back to Tavern in the Green, although obviously Tinker Street and Festiva are such small footprints. But, yeah, I mean, I really got invigorated by this whole millennial scene and this whole push of the food scene in Indianapolis. But more importantly, it just felt like the right time to come back. It felt like it was, I was ready, and it felt like maybe the city was ready for something a little bit different.
Now that's
much different, really.
So that's very interesting, you know, the fact that, that there are, you know, some comparisons that could be drawn. You know, what about, you know, the pressures, you know, of doing that? You know, speak a little bit, you know, because he seemed under intense pressure throughout the film, throughout his career, but then especially when he resurfaced and came back.
Heavy pressure. I feel it. I know Tom does. We feel it every day. I think probably more so because, let's face it, you know, if you're 30 years old and you fail and 5 years goes by and you're 35 and you rekindle the fire and the flames begin again, you still got quite a long time to, you know, do well and or fail again and come back again. We really don't have that kind of time. Not physically, mentally, financially, no. So, yes, the pressure is now much different than it was in 1985 when I opened. Yes. Yeah, I feel it.
We've been talking with Indianapolis restaurateur Peter George, who, with business partner Tom Main, operates Tinker Street and Festiva. We'll be back with more from Peter here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Jolene Ketzenberger, and we are back here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, talking this week with Indianapolis restaurateur Peter George about the new documentary, Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent. I watched the film with Peter this past week to get his reaction to the documentary, and we talked about Tower, food, the people, and the magic that can happen when it all comes together. What about the whole celebrity chef phenomenon? I mean, again, you pointed out you're not the chef, you're a restaurateur, but your name was on the restaurant at Peter's, and you were certainly one of the best-known restaurant personalities in the city. What of that sort of pressure and you know, and how that was illustrated in the film?
Well, no, I'm not a chef, but I really love food, but I love the combination of it. I think that's what really drives me, is I love being able to put together the food and the service and the whole experience, which is what I think we've done at Tinker Street, and I think what we've done at Festiva. But it's a different kind of vibe. And I think people, when we're busy, and we're usually busy, you feel that, and it's not typical. It's just not typical. That vibe is, you can't purchase it. You can't build it out of wood and drywall and stainless steel. It just doesn't happen. It's just something that occurs through the people. You know, I mean, you could go through Yelp right now or TripAdvisor and talk and look and see how many people, the vibe. It's really a cool place. It feels good. We didn't spend a lot of money on Tinker Street on the interior. It's drywall. I mean, seriously. So we didn't have some sort of glitzy interior.
It's that magic that they talk about in the film and, you know, surrounding, you know, the personality, the vibe, the way a place feels.
We talk about it all the time. Our maitre d', Tricia, just sent an email out to Tom and I just this week about what a magical night last Saturday was. And it happens, I mean, night after night there at Tinker Street. And of course, you know, Festiva's new, and we have those nights there, but Tinker Street is really something that it is. That's the word, that's what we use. I think you can, the layman can feel it, the restaurateur can feel it, the chef can feel it. And, you know, you talked about this whole thing with celebrity chef and so forth. Hey, we've got, quote-unquote, a lot of celebrity chefs right here in the city, so to speak. it's going to be interesting to see what the runs are, how long the runs are, because it can be a very short-lived profession.
And you have to wonder, you know, can a chef sustain that? Can a restaurateur sustain that? You know, as the film was showing, you know, the Jeremiah Tower got overextended, opening other restaurants, you know, wasn't perhaps at the main restaurant very much. And people want to see the people involved there. So that's a big thing, I think. So
yep.
When other places open, that's probably a challenge.
Yeah. Well, we're going through it right now, you know. I mean, opening Festiva, and we're getting ready to open the barbecue barn. So know very, very well how those things can affect us. We've been very fortunate in that, you know, things just keep building and getting better. But we've also really entrusted our team. We've got a really top-flight team. And I think if you've got that, it certainly makes it a lot easier. And, you know, I mean, we talk to them every day. You know, I mean, I talked to the chef the minute he walked in the door this morning at 11 o'clock. I was already, you know, texting him, hey, chef, and call me, please. And as soon as he got the alarm turned off, literally, he called me. So, you know, you have to keep your finger on the pulse. And our goal really is to try to be in both restaurants as much as possible per night. Maybe not so much the time, because right now we have almost 70 employees. And it takes a lot to keep that train rolling.
But people do want to see you, right? Yep. I noticed that, and I jotted that down during the film, is that people want to see you. You know, they want to see, they want to be seen, they want to feel like they're like they know you, maybe.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's. I think one of the interesting things about it is, you know, I was gone for quite some time, over a decade. And one of the things that's made Tinker Street what it is today, I think, is the fact that there were a tremendous amount of people that remembered me. And Tom has, obviously, a local following with the Puccinis. And so you put those things together and... They say you can't put, you know, a price on goodwill, and you can't. So all that goodwill that I built up for those couple of decades between, you know, 1985 and 2002 when the restaurants closed, still hung around, you know, and it was pretty, it's what's driving it. It drives Tinker Street every day.
So that's real, that magic, for lack of a better word, that you build up, that goodwill that you build up, and that people feel. Is that what they want? Is that what they're there to feel?
I think people like a reincarnation. You know? I think it is. I think, you know, people look at Tom and I and they go, gosh, you know, we've heard it time and time again. You guys are too old to be doing this. Right? I mean, what are you doing? And this is what we know. So we're going to continue doing it. But I think people like an underdog. I think people root for the underdog, and they'll support an underdog if you can provide quality food, quality service at a good price. If you can do that, then hallelujah. And I think that's what we've done. So, you know, it just keeps... The snowball just keeps getting bigger, and, you know, it's been pretty amazing, honestly.
Was there any sort of understanding of what Jeremiah Tower was going through when he, you know, resurfaced, came back to open Tavern on the Green, and it didn't go particularly well?
I can't even imagine what he was going through there, because... that was at year 73, which is 10 years older than myself right now. But 700 seats. I mean, first of all, it's a daunting task. I'm surprised he took it on in the first place. All I can say is that his finances must have gotten a little bit low. And we'll do a lot of different things for cash. But that was a daunting task. I don't know how you'd pull it off. I would never take it on, I'll tell you that. I mean, not even close.
Any other thoughts about the film itself and what people can expect when they go see it? It opens this weekend here in Indianapolis.
It's pretty darn accurate.
Is it yeah. real? The pressures, the scenes in the restaurants and that sort of thing. Is it real?
Yeah, it's pretty darn real. I'd say it's right on the money. And having been out of it, been in it, been out and back in, I can attest to the fact that the film's real. And you'll get a nice bird's eye view of the hospitality industry.
And the good, the bad, the pressures, the rewards, maybe?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's nothing better than, Saturday night we served almost 220 people at Tinker Street and everybody's having a great time and the magic act was on, and people are loving it, so gotta love that.
We've been talking about the documentary Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent, with Indianapolis restaurateur Peter George. We'll be back with an update on Peter's restaurant projects here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Indianapolis has been going through an interesting time for the local restaurant scene. We've seen a surprising number of restaurants open in the past couple of years, and we've also seen some close recently. Peter George and his business partner, Tom Main, have been among those opening new restaurants, first Tinker Street and then Festiva, both along the burgeoning 16th Street corridor. And now another restaurant, the Barbecue Barn, will be opening soon there too. I caught up with Peter recently and talked about his return to the restaurant business, his current projects, and ones that are still to come.
Well, Tinker Street really started out as a food truck 3 years or 4 years before we opened Tinker Street. I mean, it was maybe really five. We've soon found out after we researched the food truck scene in Venice, California, that very difficult to make a living, and we weren't cut out for it. And we weren't sure that our weather pattern here was cut out for it either, which is why we see the rise and fall of so many food trucks. But, as you know, because we've discussed this and talked about this, we looked at over almost 100 locations over a five-year span. And it started and stopped, I can't tell you how many times, all right? And then, finally it was kind of like, we've got an idea for a smaller footprint, so it'd be less financial burden. And we were close, but not really close. You helped me promote our three guys,
You did the pop-up,
yeah,
right?
The pop-up, yeah. Three fellows without a restaurant, that really kind of gave us inspiration because it told us that their people did really understand what I was doing. Tom had, his people that knew him and how passionate he was about food and so forth. So it gave us that last push that we needed. And, we gave us ourselves an ultimatum, and sure enough, it happened. So, and it happened in the very first place that we looked at.
Oh, you went back to the very first place
yeah.
there? Oh, my goodness. How cool
later.
Is that?
5 years later. So people think that, this restaurant thing, you just think about it and you open it up and so forth. And, yeah, that's what a lot of people do. But I don't think that's a very good way to do it. We spent a lot of time researching, and I mean thousands, tens of thousands of dollars personally, just going to restaurants and then really researching Indianapolis.
So what was it about 16th Street?
So we knew that we had an audience right there, a neighborhood audience, and that's what we really wanted to begin with.
So is that where the part of the magic comes from, it being a neighborhood place?
I think yes. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think we knew it going in. I think it's all part of it, and it's what we're just kind of sitting there on a little island, you know, and it kind of makes it a little bit neater that way, you know.
So then Festiva came after that.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, that was really Rachel, who was my lead chef at Bistro 936 in the year 2000 with Chris Ely. This has been her 17-year goal after she married her Mexican husband and learned the cuisine. This has been her dream. So we just helped her do that, and she's helped us. So that's what we're doing.
So Festiva opened, and now the Barbecue Barn is getting close, right?
Yeah. The Barbecue Barn next door to Festiva is gonna open in the next, I'm going to say 6 or 7 weeks, maybe 8 weeks max, but it's close. Blake, our pit master, he's helped us open both restaurants. He has been kind of a back in the shadows, but Blake Ellis, great guy, and he gets it. And this is his lifelong dream.
We've been talking with Indianapolis restaurateur Peter George of Tinker Street, Festiva, and the soon-to-open Barbecue Barn. Look for the restaurants online and follow them on Facebook. I'm Jolene Katzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thank you so much for going to the movies with us today as we discuss the new documentary, Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent. And thanks also to our guests, Indianapolis resident and former server at Stars, Jonathan Osher, movie critic Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, and restaurateur Peter George of Tinker Street and Festiva in Indianapolis. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indie Radio. Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, indie.